So, good morning. My name's Guy Bigwood. I'm the Group Sustainability Director of MCI. And over the last few months, I've had the pleasure of working in Denmark on the sustainability side of COP15, UN Global, UN Climate Change Conference. So what we're here to do today is to share a little bit of the learning from that. And I'm joined here with a couple of people who also worked in the project. So
I'm Heather Palin. I am coming from Novo Nordisk. We are a pharmaceutical company based in Denmark. Diabetes care is our business. I'm a meeting planner. I work in the clinical part of the organization where we actually started up a function informally 5 years ago and formally 3 years ago where I kicked off this position as meeting planner. And essentially, I'm a board member of MPI, the Danish chapter. I'm also a member of the GMIC with Guy and some others, Green Meetings Industry Council. And it's just a pleasure to be here. It's been a pleasure to work with this project. My role in this project has really been, as a corporate, bringing in the corporate side, the corporate sparring from a planner's point of view, and also on, in terms of the reporting. And I think Guy will get into that a bit later.
Great stuff. Jonathan.
And my name's Jonathan.
That's it.
No, I work for Visit Denmark, one of the key stakeholders in this project. I'm the speaker on the right-hand side of your screen.
And you're not a jockey?
No.
How are your tigers today, right? So what we want to do today is we're going to do different things. We're going to give you a little bit of an introduction about this unusual private-public partnership that we've created around COP15. So Heather's going to start off a little bit about that. Then Jonathan's going to give you a little bit of introduction about COP15, actually what it was, and why it's quite an unusual thing, being the largest political event ever created and held. And then he's going to talk a little bit about the destination strategy and how the CVB kind of worked around sustainability. And then I'm going to talk about something called the CSNP, which is the Copenhagen Sustainable Meetings Protocol, which is this methodology we've created to make meetings more sustainable, large meetings more sustainable. And then we're going to do a bit of conclusions and learning. Okay? The whole process would be great if it's interactive. Right? We're just a small team, a small group here, so if you have any burning questions, please throw them out. I'm sure some of you will do. So don't hold them to the end because you normally forget them, and we haven't got much time. And this talk we normally do in about 3 hours, so we're going to race through a lot of things and skip over a lot of interesting details. Okay, good. So without further ado, time to you, madam.
Yeah. So just to start off with our sort of basic frame of reference of where we are talking about sustainability within the meetings and events industry, we're really talking about three key areas, of course, and that's with starting with the environmental responsibility, then social responsibility and economic responsibility. Starting out in environmental responsibility, what does that really mean for us in our industry? Well, that's, of course, water use, recycling, that's waste management, our emissions, et cetera, transportation, that's a key issue as well. Social responsibility, well, what's that? That's, you know, diversity, that's working with, for example, business ethics, ensuring business ethics, that's something our company has on its top on its agenda, access, et cetera. Economic responsibility, well, we've got the supply chain involved. That's where we're all involved. Quality goods and ensuring profitability, that's really about our return on investment, isn't it? So there we have our triple bottom line for our business practices, and that's really sort of the starting point for our approach, really, in this framework and you know, working with sustainability. Wrong button. Good. So essentially, moving into what were some of the accomplishments of the COP15 project? Well, the COP15 was really essentially about greening the COP15 and achieving the sustainability certification of the BS8901, and that was checked off by the project thanks to the hard work of the team. Essentially, 100% of the delegates' carbon emissions were offset. That was a huge investment by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, about 700,000 euros. 75% of the food and beverages were certified organic. You'll hear more about that later in the presentation about how the whole city was really engaged in that and how there was a transformation within the food and beverage sector as well. 600,000 euros were saved by not giving gifts. the sticky story of greening the Cut 15. That was a great key message for the media out there, and a great social impact that was made through this program, and I won't steal your fire. I think we'll go over that a little bit later. The Bella Center, the venue, the Congress Center, made a great impact. 20% reduction they reached from their, I think it was 2006 figures, till 2009 on their CO2 emissions. That was a fantastic achievement, and they worked really, really hard to get there. And how did this really happen then? And this was really a unique partnership that came together with visionary people that really came together and said, you know, we have the Cut 15 coming to Denmark. This is a unique possibility for the destination to really brand itself and really show that we're different from the rest. And sort of, you know, green the Cut 15 was decided by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that it was really a key objective. And you'll see that later on in the presentation as well about the leadership that was really taken there. We had the head of sustainability, obviously Guy Bigwood, who was hired to lead the project and lead the entire team, and the multi-stakeholder engagement, which was a consortia of interest parties, if you will, who really led the way on this work. So the people behind the work, behind what you'll hear today, are, of course, the MCI, Guy Bigwood, and his team, who, you know, provided the sustainability services and also the housing services, but also the CBB, Wonderful Copenhagen Visit Denmark, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, of course, the organization body of the CUP, the Bella Center, the venue, the city of Copenhagen, and then Novo Nordisk as a company with a triple bottom line that was very much integrated into our business. We're very interested in moving into the sustainable meetings arena and wanted to use this as a learning opportunity for us to really move our work forward. And I'll share some of my reflections with you and hope to hear some of yours as well later on in the presentation. So the mission of the project was to share the knowledge and the learning from the Cut 15. That's what this is really all about, and that's why we're also here today to really share some of those learnings with you. And there will be a paper on that will a full report that will share the measurements and a lot of the data there. And really, the vision is to accelerate the transformation of the meetings industry towards sustainability. Again, you know, that's you'll see the some of the examples later on in the presentation of how Denmark and Copenhagen itself as a destination has really transformed itself and is really a great possibility to host future sustainable meetings and events. The project outcomes really start with the implementation of a BS 8901 in Denmark. That was a major milestone for Denmark. We can now actually certify within the BS 8901 through a standardization body called Dansk Standard. The Cut 15, as I mentioned before, has proudly actually achieved the certification of the Cut 15. And out of the work of this project will come, again, the full extended report of the learnings from the Cut 15, and some of those will be shared today, as well as the white paper or the Copenhagen Sustainable Meetings Protocol, which is the sort of management or sort of the framework for good leadership, which Guy will share with you as well. Great tool, which I will also be working with as well. So I'll turn it over then to Jonathan for
Thank you.
The Cup.
I'll tell you a little bit, go into a little bit of detail about what we talk about when we talk about the COP 15. Interestingly enough, COP doesn't stand for a shortened version of Copenhagen. We would love to have claimed that, but it stands for the Conference of the Parties, which is an organization or conference that the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework for Climate Change, put together. There's a COP 1, there was a COP 2, we're up to COP 15, and the next one will be COP 16, taking place in December in 2010. But the 2009 event took place, as you can see, in Copenhagen in December. You'll notice there that it says actual attendance. We had three charts, or we had three graphs when we were planning in the process of this event. One said this is what the number of delegates that we're working with, and that had a figure called 15,000 delegates. We also had in the back drawer, in the emergency room, we had another graph or another chart that said, oh my God, what happens if... And that said 18,000 delegates. The actual attendance was 30,222 people. That's seen from a meetings industry. Just think about the logistics of that one, particularly as you didn't know in pretty much more than a week in advance who was going to be, whether it's going to be 15, whether it's going to be 18, or whether it's going to end up with 30,000. But there we have it. 30,000 people came along. The Danish Ministry of Foreign Affairs was, in a way, the client, but also the host. The UNFCC have a host city agreement. They made it with the city of Copenhagen. This goes back 3 years ago. The whole process of bidding, it's like something out of a mixture between a Masonic lodge and all. It's quite a strange tender process, but ultimately we're very pleased because we did win it. And as you can see, it is one of the largest, it is the largest political meeting. And why doesn't this work?
Right, that one.
That was the one. Thank you. Out of those 30,222 delegates, 122 of them were heads of state. Again, think about the complexities of trying to deal with the egos, I mean political motivation of 122 different heads of state. This is quite a famous picture because this is a picture that started one of the walkouts from one of the delegations because they didn't like the fact that these guys were meeting by themselves. The key to the political framework having a conference of this scale is actually the 6,000 NGOs, non-governmental organizations that were in attendance at the conference as well. They were the backbone. They were the ones that were driving a lot of the decision-making forward. And of course, having 4,000 media and press made the jobs of those people involved a little bit more fun as well, that's for sure. When you got that many, they start reporting on the reporters. But it was the biggest international political meeting ever held outside of New York. 1,000 police officers. There were police officers from three different nations on hand. They weren't needed in the end, but certainly on hand.
It's actually the biggest ever collection of heads of state ever in the history of mankind.
Right. There you go. Biggest ever collection of heads of state. No wonder the security was so tight. I think what's interesting, I mean, you've got the information. I'm not going to work my way through every single fact there. But what is interesting is the little thing almost at the bottom, the second line from the bottom. 2,500 meetings were held during the period of those 2 weeks of the conference. Quite something. Again, seen from an organisational point of view, you'll see as conference organisers what a lot of work went into the project. But what's very interesting, you know, they set out with something called COP15. Is it going to be the greenest meeting ever? Well, maybe not, because the priority wasn't always about greening COP15. The priority was about security. Number one opportunity was the security. There was an idea to get all the heads of states coming into the destination by bicycle. Great idea, but the security guys didn't like it, so it was ditched. And it was all about trying to make it as green as possible in the consideration of a larger international event. And seen from our perspective, seen from the point of view of where we were coming from, Guy will talk a little bit about something called leadership. We couldn't have got a better statement of leadership than the Prime Minister in the opening address, talking about the meetings industry, talking about what we were trying to achieve. That statement is a pretty, pretty strong statement to say it matters in Denmark. In deference to some of my Scandinavian colleagues who I can see in the room, I'll say that it matters to Scandinavians. And I think one of the big keys that we have, or one of the big opportunities that we have in Scandinavia, is the fact that a lot of the things that we're starting to learn about in the meetings industry are things that have been done without even questioning. Of course we recycle. It's not a big issue. You know, when you look at some of these facts and figures, 40% of people go to work by bicycle. Well, you know, that's quite something. I live in London. I don't think it's even 0.4% in London. But, you know, the infrastructure is there. You've got 340 kilometres of bicycle paths. If you have those, then people are prepared to cycle. And that's a big message from a local council perspective. We've got buses. We've got water buses. We've got bus buses. We've got train buses. We've got absolutely every type of public transportation that you can imagine. And I think what's also important is that because it's coming from the people, it's not just some kind of political will that people said, it's actually part of the community. You know, you've got to point out there, over 100 Climate Plus restaurants, all serving organic food. Again, not just a Danish thing, a Scandinavian thing, but it helps make people realise what it's all about. Seen from our perspective, seen from the NTO and the CVB perspective, we realised 2.5 years ago that this was an opportunity to engage sustainability and to increase the sustainability of the city. So even though our starting point was pretty good, we still needed to go on that journey, and it's a journey that, of course, we're still involved with. And the most important part of what we were doing was in getting many, many other people in the city involved with this whole project. It wasn't just, hey, we've got the conference, now let's sit back and enjoy it. It was, hey, we've got the conference, now let's sit back and work out what we need to do in order to be able to leave some kind of legacy for the city, in order to be able to give something back to the communities that we're dealing with.
Stuff. Thank you.
Guy.
Perfect timing, man. Okay. So when we kind of sat back afterwards, after kind of planning, we kind of thought about what have we done well in terms of the strategic management, because that's one of the key things. We took a very strategic approach to this. And we decided that we could create some of those learnings in this framework. So this is called the CSMP. So CSMP is this framework, which is this. It's quite a simple thing. But it's really kind of how we approached it. As we picked up, we had some really damn good leadership. And leadership comes from the bottom and it comes from the top. Okay? Then we took the strategic approach, so we used BS8901 really to define what were the steps that we needed to do. And I'm going to go through each of these in more detail now. So that allowed us to define the issues and then work through those issues to set our policy. Then it's great, you've got this fantastic strategy. Everything's pretty, isn't it? Lovely. But unless anyone's with you and following you and taking this on, you're not going to go anywhere. So strategic engagement was a key part. And the way we built teams and listened to our stakeholders and got them involved and found out what they needed as well as what we wanted them to help us with. So, and then, you know, that's nice, but it has to happen on a day-to-day basis, right? It needs to be part of your standard operating procedures. And so that's really where we hit this operational integration. And then lastly, you've got to manage it right. You need good management, or today's term is kind of governance. How do we manage that properly? So all of our stakeholders, the ones close and the ones far, the NGOs and the public rights and the civil rights people, were happy. So I'm going to take you through that now. Okay. So in this process, we were really helped a lot by some of these emerging standards that are coming out or are out. So BS8901, which some of you may have heard, is evolving in something called ISO 21, which Fiona is chairing and very involved in at the back. That really helped us with our kind of our management approach and really thinking this through about what we need to do and when we need to do it and how we need to manage it. Then we used APEX in a review of APEX, which is the system, and I'll go into more detail this next, from the States. 9 areas, and this really made us review in each step, each area of the event organisation, were we doing the right kind of things? Is there anything else we missed out on that we could pick up on? And lastly, and now that's the real time now, as we're writing the report, which is almost finished, the case study report, is how do we write a report in the best way? And the GRI, which is the Global Reporting Initiative, creates sets of guidelines for writing reports about sustainability. Now we're leading a group of us are in a process to create specific guidelines for events around GRI, and that's helping us even further. But so that's how we click all these things together. So when I come to leadership, you know, as in a good leadership, you need vision, you need purpose, you need principles, you need commitment. Okay. We had a very clear commitment from the government, had a clear leadership from 2 people, from the top management and from the head of the event, Sven Olling, and then from Jan Christoph Napierski, who's the head of sustainability. And it's really that top-down and bottom-up approach which is critical in organising an event like this sustainably. With a clear purpose, we had focused areas of we wanted to minimise environmental impact, we increased the social legacy, and we wanted to manage it with the bucks we had. And the principles, we very much used the Global Compact as our guiding system. The Global Compact comes up with 10 principles around human rights, labour rights, anti-corruption, environment. They really focused and helped us as a filter about what we did. And all of those principles were written up in a policy that every one of the suppliers had to sign and agree to if they wanted to work with the project. What was unique, perhaps, until the Olympics, is that every one of the sponsors had to sign up to the same conditions as the suppliers, and that's not quite normal. We were just as strict managing sponsors as we were with suppliers. So next on strategy. So we kind of got these 5 key areas of strategy. It's very much BS8901. It's what are the issues you're dealing with? What are you going to deal with? You know, because you could say, You know, an event has marketing, it has logistics, it has sales, it has content, it has program. What are you going to include? So we decided we're going to deal with logistics because that's what the team controlled and that's what we could really influence. Content and program was defined by the UN, anyone who's worked with the UN is quite a fun organisation to try and influence. As we saw, 122 heads of state didn't quite influence them. So then you define some goals, clear objectives, and out of those goals, you know, what are your priorities? We had 10 goals. We had kind of a certain amount of priorities, kind of four key priorities, and then that got written up in the policy. That is what you give then to the people to make it happen. So some of the issues. Our issues were the venue. We had a pretty unsustainable venue. It was from 1975. They weren't engaged in sustainability. It was a big issue 2 years ago. This weekend, I was reviewing and helping them with their IMEX GMIC Green Award entry. And to see the change that that venue has done in 2 years is amazing. And that's a tribute to this project. We realised the rest of the supply chain was not there yet. And we needed to spend a lot of time to manage them. We realised that the certification process was very important, not just because it gave us structure, but it gave us credibility and an integrity that we could communicate out to the world. Remember, 4,000 press who came to hunt us. They came to destroy us, basically. They were pretty nasty, most of them, and we defended them off because we had a very good structure and a good story, which is around communication. So our priorities. Jonathan hit on that, but I think this is key because a lot of people say, well, this sustainability thing's all about hugging trees. It was priority number four. You know, it's the real world. Security is important. The actual outcome of the meeting was critical. Didn't quite deliver it, but you know, that's critical. And then we decided that actually we wanted to put the showcase of sustainability in front of the actual sustainability, which is a hard one, but we decided with 4,000 press and 15,000 delegates, we could actually accelerate change more by showing people what are the possibilities in the future rather than today. It's an interesting one, but we decided that was the right way to go forward. So when we look at the stakeholder engagement, what was quite key with Sven and Jan and Christoph and all of us, the way we were kind of sucked into this, it was their approach of, you know, these are your stakeholders and they're here, the Danish ministry's here. And stakeholders are upstream and downstream. Normally we look upstream, those are your suppliers, your event agencies, your government services, the venues, the hotels. But not everyone thinks downstream, which is the employees, the clients, the sponsors, the participants, the local community. And what we did quite well is how do we actually strategically think about it? How do we build teams to pull all this together and work out where our influence is the weakest? How can we actually give some type of influence or minimal type of control? So let me give you an example. So we did that in kind of three ways. We started off internally with a green team. So Jan Christoph set up a green team inside the ministry. Then we had a host task force. The host task force is basically the CSMP. It's the same people plus the hotel industry. And we met monthly for 2 years. And monthly, what did we do? We shared our challenges and we asked people to help. And everyone had a forum of which they could say, well, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm stuck. This is what I agree with. This is what I don't agree with. And together, it's pretty much what there were about eight of us, or more of us, we work stuff out. It's an interesting thing when you put together a group of people, because you naturally put peer pressure on people who are perhaps not also performing. There's kind of this competitivity from the city or from the venue, and you say, oh, you haven't certified then, have you? And you kind of go, you know, you can play with that. And then lastly, I think this is a really interesting thing. We formed a task force. Had this idea, Michael and I, to form a task force of all of the big events that were coming to town. And there's a lot of big events in Copenhagen last year. There was at least five climate change events. So we got 12 of the biggest events, and we had one person for each event, and we sat down with the top planner, and we said, you know, we really want to make this sustainable, and we know you do, and how about we all kind of work together, again, share issues and work through stuff. It's one of our meetings. And what that allowed us to do as planners was to focus our efforts and decide where there was weak spots and how we needed to put pressure on a certain few individuals. Because there's some people, it's the real world, that don't quite go as fast as you need them to go. They weren't care, weren't interested in sustainability, they really weren't kind of going fast enough. So, you know, when you represent, we represented, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars, we could go to people and say, come on, we expect you to change. And I'll give you some more examples of that. So when we look at the operational integration, how do we make this happen day to day? The APEX guidelines give you 9 areas which are really useful to kind of working out how to approach this. So you can, these are online, they're coming out soon, and they give you 400 and something guidelines about what you could do. We didn't follow these exactly, but we reviewed what we were doing against them to make sure we were on the right track. Okay. So I'm going to just pick off a couple of those areas that are kind of interesting, I think. So transportation was one of the 9 areas. So it was a key priority for us, not just because of the environmental aspects. Getting people off cars, 30-something thousand off cars on the public transport, had a huge health aspect in terms of getting rid of contaminants. It had a huge social issue for the local residents. Can you imagine how many cars we would need on the road, and what that would have done to Copenhagen if we hadn't got people on public transport. And then a kind of financial impact. So we were really successful. We got 94% of people on public transport. And that was through, one, free public transport. 2, a lot of communication, guiding people, helping people to use it. And it was just damn tight quicker and easier. On the VIP side, unfortunately, you can't get all the heads of state to use limousines. To use public transport for security reasons. So we brought in 120 limos. The majority of those, plus another 120 vehicles, use some type of low-carbon technology, gas, hydrogen, whatever it is. Plus that, we had 200 bicycles, which were free and people could use. The trouble is, we only had 200, and that wasn't quite enough. Accommodation, this is one of the key successes. We started off in June 2008 at 12%. By the end of the session, we were at 53% of all of the accommodation in the Greater Copenhagen area was certified. We either Green Key, SVON, or Eco Label. So that was, you know, it's a huge success. And the big driver for that was that host task force. The host task force really drove that through and met monthly and reviewed it and worked out how we could, you know, we found out who was not being certified, who are the key hotels, how do we address them, who knows the manager, who knows the person in control, who can call them, who can push them, you know, letters from the mayor, all that kind of stuff. We really identified this as a key thing. Food and beverage is one of the key successes. This is kind of, I think this is a good success because a year before I was working, I had a separate contract with the Bella Center, I was working with them, and the food and beverage manager was not into it. He was one of those guys that just didn't, you know, sustainability kind of stuff. And then after a lot of chipping around, I remember one day he came up to me and he was like really excited and he's kind of buzzed and he's like, you know what? Everything you said, we've done. And he was really happy about it. And you said, you know what? Everything I've done has saved me money. And he had a big smile. And now he's a leader. He made this happen, this individual. It's like 75% organic food and beverage at the event. Contractually, the ministry put in the contract 65%. So they actually went beyond that. He managed to get 40-something percent local. You know, this is a lot. I think it's 20,000 organic chickens or something crazy. You know, 300 tons of food. So, amazing amount of work. And what was quite interesting on terms of social sustainability, the government decided to subsidise this. Because, you know, that it was a little bit more expensive. But we didn't want the delegates to pay more. Actually, we wanted them to have a very low price, so that a delegate coming from a developing country, somewhere in Africa or India or wherever, could have a really good plate of healthy Danish local organic food, and it was €3, I think it was. I wish you could have that here. Organic. And the food was good. And so, you know, they invested over €300,000 to make that happen. Okay. Sticky stories. This is kind of one of the... I love this because this envisions about real good sustainability. We got rid of bags. We had a no-gift policy. In UN events, it's really strange. That really doesn't happen. So we got rid of the bags. That saved us 537,000 euros. Also saved us a lot of environmental waste. Crap going into the landfill. Then with that money, we invested that in providing master's education in business in Copenhagen universities for 11 students from the developing world. Long-term change. They will now go back to their countries with an understanding of sustainability, a very good understanding of economics and where it make a difference. Good stuff. Okay. So that's, we're down to here. The last bit is the governance, and this is kind of very where we're at the moment, writing the report. Good governance, good management events, about transparency, about accountability. These are things that are really kind of shaking up the event world, especially the agency world at the moment. You know, we think that a lot of this is down to really good reporting. It's a triple bottom line. So environmental, social, economic reporting. It's about having someone externally verify and certify your events. It's about having really good management controls and internal auditing, and lately getting some of those stakeholders actually part of the team and letting them externally become part of the verification or insurance channel. How am I doing for time?
Finish up.
Okay, good. I've got minutes. Okay, so BS89N was our system. We started very late. It was one of our biggest mistakes. We really didn't actually start the process until less than 6 months before. We trained the team in the summer, in kind of August. We did our first pre-audit in pre-audit in August. Then we did an official pre-audit with Dance certification, and then they created the process. They were very, very tough, as good auditors should be. They really made us sweat. Our own internal auditing process, we used something called Meet Green that allowed us to benchmark here performance of the event against other events in the system and against the kind of apex areas. That really helped us work out if we were doing good and bad compared to some other key performers in the event world. And Deloitte, we actually hired in to do the emissions calculation. So they came in and they've done a fantastic job. 70,000 tonnes of CO2 at the moment. We're still kind of finalising that. So huge impact. So something we really needed to do well. And we're reporting that at the moment. We've got a report out that I'm just trying to finalise. In the next few days it will be done and that will be out, and this will go into a lot more detail about what we're doing. So that's the kind of story. That's kind of where we've been. That's helped us. It's kind of been an interesting process. So, anyone got any questions? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had to build, I can't remember, how many thousand, 15,000 metres more of space at Bella Centre. And so how do you heat that? And that, you know, one of our biggest CO2 impacts was that we had half as much impacts from our new temporary storage as we did from all of the other space of Bella. So that was it. But it was an interesting thing we actually used to motivate people to use public transport. Because there's a metro station right by there. But normally the entrance to Bella Centre is around the other side, if you know where it is. So we moved the entrance to make it really convenient. Then we moved the taxi stand almost a kilometre away. December, Copenhagen, really cold. Do you want to walk almost a kilometre or do you want to walk about 20 yards? Yeah, it's a pretty simple approach. Okay, what we did, we went out and found a particular project. We worked with the Danish Energy Ministry, okay, who obviously that's what they do. And so they had found a project in Bangladesh. And it's an interesting project because in Bangladesh they, by some reason, seem to make a lot of bricks. And they got a kiln, this furnace that makes heats up and makes bricks. And, well, they build houses with, right? And they're really old, these furnaces, these heaters, and really contaminating. health-wise, or carbon as well as emissions-wise. And so we're rebuilding or building a new furnace.
So you know exactly where you want to be placed, because sometimes the problem is
that. And if you want to give 700,000 euros to someone, you know what's interesting? You know, I told about the press and really hounding us and hassling us. We had a team from CNN who went to the project. And they came back with pictures. We'd never seen the pictures. We just kind of read about it and we talked to the people. And he said, yep, we visited them. We know it's a good project. Like, whew. You know, so there's a huge risk element here.
With all the people involved in the organization, how many were, let's say, proactively engaged in sustainability? How many did you have to convince? And when was the tipping point between, let's say,
That's an interesting thing. So we had in the ministry there was a team of 21 planners of every form and shape. Okay, there was one dedicated person, Jan Christoph Napierski, to sustainability. And then from MCI we came in halfway through with two people. So, and then, I don't know, when do you think was the tipping point? I think it's July.
Yeah, I think, well, Guy and I were involved with the project for pretty much almost three years in some shape or description. So I would say somewhere between 2007 and December the 18th. But I do agree that it was really towards the last few months of momentum. But, you know, it's like a rolling stone. I'm sorry to use our cliches, but it really is. You know, you get everybody on board. And you had people coming up to you saying, yeah, what else can we do? And that was starting when the international news media were really focusing on it. July, August, and through to September kind of thing. And then he just kept on driving.
This morning's speak really focused it to me because a core team of us worked for quite a long time, almost for years. And most we weren't getting paid. We just believed this was such a unique opportunity. And we'd been knocked down and the tigers were coming out all the time. And really it was about a year before when the government had made really clear commitment and hired a person that it started to come together, and you know, and then in July it just went.
I think if I can just take one other point on that, the road that we're travelling, again, sounds like another cliche, but we're just starting off because now it's a question of getting the engagement going further. We've done that process, we've got the engagement, and now the fun chime starts and getting everybody on the meetings industry all trying to move in the same direction on that. So we've still got a long way to go, I think.
Great. Interesting.
In terms of creating an experience for the delegates to really perceive what it's like, offset against what the CO2 that is, where do you think the balance is in experience and achieving the objective of the actual plans?
What a great idea.
The CO2 of the
what a great idea.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic idea. I think what was done by civil society and the Danish government in trying to recreate the actual impacts of Copenhagen is fantastic. Unfortunately, that wasn't good enough when it came down to the hardcore negotiation. But I'm very positive about the future.
And it's okay, good. Okay. Last couple minutes before we, so we can wrap up here the session. Essentially, what they did at the COP15 was to survey the delegates and find out, you know, whether really the delegates thought that it was important that they were greening the COP15 and whether we were actually successful doing that. And really they found out that, yes, indeed, it was important. 4.7 out of 5 was the weighted average response of the delegates that greening the COP15 was important. And the successfulness, well, that was 3.9. That was also very high. And essentially, if you look at the pie chart down here, you'll see that really what they noticed was that the tap water, you know, not using bottles, really that's integrated experience, right? That was really one of the aspects they noticed. And also the climate-friendly public transportation as well, again, integrated into their experiences. So the legacy that the COP15 left in the city, I mean, you know, clearly you can hear through all the examples that Copenhagen is never going to be the same. It's a changed destination forever, and we're really proud of that achievement. And we're proud to be able to offer a sustainable meetings product in the destination that can help you all also make a difference for your delegates and for your events in moving towards sustainability and sustainable practices. There's also the PR and branding benefits. I mean, Denmark is really branding itself based on its green profile now. You probably heard about it by now, that really they're going after being held as the capital of sustainable meetings. So there's really a branding aspect of this and a PR aspect of this that really I think we can all think about and try to integrate more. You know, it is about business at the end of the day. It's about going after the triple bottom line. In our organization at Novo Nordisk, you know, we're really looking at how we can differentiate ourselves from our competitors. And that's really the angle that I took in terms of really approaching the sustainability issue in our organization and really trying to drive it forward. We're a global company with 30,000 employees over 90 countries. And, you know, in order for me to really drive it home, I had to look at our triple bottom line because as a company we have different values and we really pride ourselves on our values. And I think that's something that we can all also look at integrating into our business models as well, is to really go for a balanced approach between the economic, social, and environmental responsibility. You know, and for us, our patients are at the center. That's really what we say. You know, we're out there to make a difference for our patients and for the treatment of our patients and their quality of life. And really trying, you know, for you all to I think move this forward as well, to make the case for your customers and for your clients as well, is to look at, you know, what's the value for them. You know, at the end of the day, by you practicing sustainability, you're also promoting trust. You know, at the bottom of trust is obviously also that's a reputation driver. So I think that's something that we very much integrate into our business model. And I think that can be a source of inspiration, really, because, you know, when I look at this as a planner, you know, I'm looking at a really large organization, and we're, you know, we have a triple bottom line, and we're doing a lot within sustainability. In terms of the meetings and events industry, I can't say that we're there yet. I can say that through our basic values, we do integrate a lot of aspects, but we don't have a program up and running yet, and that was part of our reason for being involved in this. We paid to be involved in it, yes. And now the outcome of it is obviously going to be a report of the COP15 learnings that will be shared with everybody in the industry that you can benefit from as well as the CSMP, which is a model here that we can all really use actively to start making our own plans, you know, defining what are our issues. In our organization, for example, you know, we look at our leadership and we say, okay, we are committed to the UN Global Compact, and we state that very clearly. And then I think it's about for us boiling it down to the meetings and events industry. Well, what does that mean for us? And probably we will look to the GMIC, the Green Meetings Industry Council, and look at the natural steps, for example. And then from there, really define, okay, what is our strategy? Well, again, it's going back to differentiation for us. How can we differentiate ourselves and create really a different experience for our delegates? I think that's really where I see the competitive advantage here, is really to say, you know, we're a different type of company. We can offer you, you know, a triple bottom line approach that is a long-term solution. And that can really make a difference for your promoting your company and your business at the end of the day. I'm obviously going to be looking into how I need to engage my stakeholders. At the end of the day, putting together an operational strategy, you got a lot of different ideas from Guy on you know what some of the various aspects can be that you can hit on looking at sustainable destinations. I mean, we're a buyer, so we'll be looking out there to you to start greening your destinations like Copenhagen has done. We will be sourcing in the future based on sustainability profiles. So I can only very much encourage you all to you know join the movement and start integrating it into your practices, because there are buyers and we're looking and we will be putting it into contracts. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really, let's see, we're not forwarding here. Build it into the experience. It's about healthy meetings. I think it's how you package it. Some people may have a difficult time really selling this, to your suppliers, to your partners, to your customers. But at the end of the day, I think it's also about finding what is the common denominator, what can we all relate to. In our environment, it's about health. But it's also about health in every environment. So I think, putting the health first and integrating a healthy theme to your meetings can also be a way to package it and sell it. Healthy meetings, healthy planet, and a healthy you, really, at the end of the day. So I think with that, we're really out of time. So should we open up for questions, I think? Are there any questions to the presentation? Any obstacles you might see to integrating sustainability in your environment, where you are in the supply chain?
What didn't we do right? What haven't we included? That's also something you might want to think about.
There's a lot of things that we didn't really write.
You weren't supposed to be answering this,
yeah,
by the way, guys.
So, you've heard the press, you've seen this. Anything else? Can you pick up on? We made a total balls up over recycling. All our recycling, we got very contaminated, and we had 0% recycling. We incinerated it all. So we can say we have a zero waste event. There's the beauty of greenwashing, right? Zero waste event. The good thing is all of our waste was burnt next door. It was turned into power that feeds the community next door. And a lot of people think that's a great solution. I don't agree with that. Incineration creates contaminants. It's not the healthiest form, and it's not the most efficient form. There's actually a lot of people like that because they've invested a lot of money in incinerators and they think that's a great way. So there's a lot of polemic there. And I could bring other people in the room and explain that was the best thing to do, but I don't think so. Right. The time is ended. We've got a little video if you'd like to stay and see the video. To actually take you to COP15. It's kind of a fun little video. It's 2 minutes long. I'd like to remind you also to spot me and do your your assessment of this session. That's really useful and powerful to us as we try and get better. And we're here if you've got any questions. So come with us to Denmark.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
To be here with you in Copenhagen. This city, of course, distinguishes itself for being so clean that you can actually swim in its harbor.
And the sound of your holiday, baby, and the taste of your love run within me. And there are the flowers in your spit when you enter my mouth under the bed, down on the floor. So take me.
Look around this carbon-conscious city, and you should feel hope. Copenhagen is often voted as one of the most livable cities in the world. For your kind attention and warm hospitality. Thank you very much, and I'll be back. I'll be back. I'll be back. Thank you.
All right. We have to do it, right? Thank you very much. If you have any questions, we're here afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you.